शिला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री दौजी गोपाल की जय, नंतरा श्रीमद भागवतम की जय, श्री वेणु गीत की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रणाम हरि बोल। So, good evening, all of you, welcome back, and let's continue with our series on Sri Venu Git. Today, meeting number 17, and we will be, hopefully, let's see, finishing verse 15. We started the study of this sloka in our previous session, first part. We will repeat the verse, of course, and we will make a brief recap. And today we will see the second part. So let's go first to the verse itself, and then we make the recap, since it will be on the basis of on the verse. So we can recite it again together. In Sanskrit, it says like this. Nadyastada tad appadharya mukunda gitam आवर्तलक्षितमनोभवभग्नवेगः आलिङ्गनस्थगितमुर्मिभुजैर्मुरारिर्घृणन्तिपादजुगलं कमलोपहारः. So I'll repeat the translation. It says, when the rivers hear the flute song of Krishna, their minds begin to desire him. And thus the flow of their currents is broken, underwaters are agitated, moving around in whirlpools. Then, with the arms of their waves, the rivers embrace Murari's lotus feet, and, holding onto them, present offerings of lotus flowers. So, this is the verse that we will continue studying today, and we will make some brief recap of what we already went through in our previous meeting, somehow first half of the verse or something like that. So the gopis, who before this were speaking about other living entities like cows and deer and devis, devas, birds and so on, now say, okay, enough with conscious beings, let's turn our attention to inanimate objects now. So in their ecstasy, they're go to so-called inanimate objects, so-called unconscious beings, and to discover there's nothing unconscious here. I mean, whatever we turn our attention, everything is fully vibrating with some feeling for Krishna. As we mentioned, that's also part of their trying to conceal their own parakiyava, which is coming more and more to the surface and wanting to erupt in volcanic proportions. But somehow, till now, they have been able to not allow that to happen. So here they describe the rivers, mainly, mostly we have spoken Jamuna and Manasa Ganga in Vrindavan. As classically, a river is seen as flowing towards the ocean, converging in the ocean, which is seen in a symbolic way, the ocean representing the husband, the river representing the wife, and uniting the two of them in that converging point. So in this way, the gopis are saying, okay, they are going to, but by hearing the flute of Krishna, what's happening with the rivers, they break their current and they start to flow in the opposite direction. And their husbands, they are not condemning that. They're allowing that to happen. The ocean is not coming to Vrindavan to take the river back or something. The ocean is allowing that to happen. He's not joining the river, but he's allowing that to happen. But the gopis say, our husbands, they're not like the ocean. When we want, we first of all, we should try to transmutate our natures in order to do what our hearts is mandating us to do, which is to follow the sweet clarion call of the flute. We have not done yet that fully. We see this unfolding in the feelings of the gopis yet to come. And our husbands are not cooperating as the ocean does with the river, basically. So here this verse is showing a nice sequence of how the reverse reacts towards Krishna's flute. First of all, expressing some whirlpools, which may be parallel to agitation, some mental whirlpools. If you are mentally agitated, you have your mind is whirlpooling or something. It's pulling you somewhere, whirlpools. So here the rivers are showing the effect of smara, of Cupid, for the gopis. Rivers are seen in the conjugal mode, and generally that's seen, as Guru Maharaj was explaining the other day, how in Vrindavan, in one sense, we could think there's no Santaras. So everyone is, whether in Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya. So generally, rivers are seen in the context of Madhurya. And the gopis, on top of that, project their own Madhurya in this connection. So the first thing is the rivers are making whirlpools. They are approaching Krishna, embracing his feet. Some acharyas say embracing even more to the feet, even up to the chest. Holding to those feet, not only embracing for a moment, but keeping there and presenting offering of lotus flowers to him. So, basically, that's what we mentioned last class, and we finished with one of two names for Krishna in this verse. Remember which was the name?
Mukunda.
Because the gopis in this verse, they are not saying Venu Gita, in this case they say Mukunda Gita, the song of Mukunda. And we went through some of the possible meanings of the word Mukunda, to begin with he who gives liberation, and we spoke about the extraordinariness of Mukti, as insignificant as it is seen by someone with Prem, it nonetheless remains an extraordinary achievement unto itself, if analyzed impartially, objectively. I mean, to be beyond suffering, to be beyond misery, beyond the gunas, beyond samsara, beyond maya shakti. I mean, that's overwhelming achievement. So if someone says, that's insignificant, that actually speaks about how much more overwhelming is that other achievement. But that's not something we should also speak cheaply, like, mukti is insignificant. I mean, if we have the capacity to walk that talk, that's one thing. But if not, we should be respectful and properly honor everything. So for the gopis, they want Mukunda giving them mukti in the sense of freeing them from social obstacles, from daily duties at home, and so they abandon, as we mentioned, their shyness and patience and just run behind the flute. And also Mukunda means he who gives this taste for mukti. Muku, the part ku connected with kupchita, which means this taste. So he who gives such a thing that is above mukti, in connection to which mukti remains almost lack without any taste whatsoever. So the gopis are there. They are in prem, fully. They are embodiments of prem, embodiments of that reality in comparison to which mukti pales, you say? Pales. Another meaning of Mukunda was he who has his mukha, his face, as a kunda flower, which is all the qualities. He has aroma and tenderness and beauty. Not for the gopis, Krishna's face is black. No? In Madhurya, with Madhurya vision, they depict Krishna's face in that way, and they would like to be the bumblebee taking the nectar from that face. Now, of course, Krishna sometimes is compared himself to a bumblebee who drinks the pollen of the lotus hearts of the Vrajavasis and becomes so much intoxicated in drinking that pollen that the night is coming, the lotus is closed, and the bumblebee remain trapped in the flower without being able to live, and without wanting to live. But sometimes we can apply the same analogies to both. No? Krishna and the Vrajavasis are both bumblebees and lotuses to each other, depending from which perspective you want to see it. And of course, in another level, also Mukunda means he who frees one from all obstacles. When Krishna will meet more intimately the gopis, he will free all different ornaments and elements that will be an obstacle to a further, more comprehensive union, if you will. So again, the gopis are implying all the things just by saying Mukunda. They, as we mentioned, in their nature, in their way of expressing reality, it's not necessary for them to say, we are actually feeling these things and we are saying Mukunda because this and this, and we are saying this among us because we need to unpack the content because we don't have that particular capacity. But among themselves, the gopis just say Mukunda Gita, and all the other gopis hear just those two words, and immediately they can understand and sympathize what's going on in the heart of each one of them, because all of them are aligned with that. So of course our prayer is also when that day will be ours, in which we can, in proper Sangha, we can be so much intimately connected with each other that just a few words will be enough to, just a few glances will be enough to know what's going on in each one's heart. That will be the ideal of Sadhu Sangha, total transparency and total interaction in the context of that transparency. So here we have the example of the Siddhas, of the perfected beings in that connection. And we as sadhakas need that perfect role model to follow to build upon our sadhaka project from wherever we are. Anyhow, that was last class. So today we will continue, and we will continue, especially start today's class by continuing with the second name that Krishna receives in this verse. Interestingly, if I'm not mistaken, this is the first verse in Venu Gita where Krishna is receiving more than one name in one single verse. So, with some reason, as we will see. So the second name he receives is Murari. It's a very famous name of Krishna, Murari. Krishna Murari. So let's try to unpack, as we did with Mukunda, which are the multiple implications of Murari. As you see, it will never be just one meaning. That's not how it happens in the higher departments. It's not like, so what's the meaning of that name? Well, there are 108 layers and more, but we will say a few. Actually, there is no limit to that, because each name of Krishna is none different from him. He's Abhinatvam Namanamino. His name and named are none different. So, I mean, you cannot put a limit on Krishna. You cannot put a limit on the implications of who Krishna is and all that can happen from him, all the potential residing in someone like Krishna. So in exactly equal level, you cannot put limitations on each of his names, which depict, you could say, but each name is depicting a particular aspect of Krishna, or a certain number of things, not all of them in one name. That's why he has many names. But each one of those aspects each name depicts is in itself unlimited also. So we cannot put a limit to that. Someone can say, oh, Yashoda Nandan is a name that is limited to his relationship with Yashoda and his Vatsalya connection, and he's not speaking about the gopis, if you will. So it's not unlimited in that sense, but his relationship with Yashoda is unlimited. And whatever the two of them feel for each other is unlimited. So in that sense, it's unending layers of meaning in that particular name. And with that name, with each name, the same idea applies. So that said, let's go to Murari and just touch a little bit upon some of the possibilities that our Acharya have gifted us with. So let's begin with the classical meaning, which generally many times is the most general type of meaning of the name, and from there generally we are being taken to deeper and deeper layers of purpose, if you will, inside that name. And that's how it happens. We begin by a general conception of something, and then we are taken by the hand into another layer of possibility. And when we thought, oh, wow, incredible, I never had thought of that. Let's go one more. Huh? Like Guru Maharaj likes to share this story. Like, okay, now I learned the Bhagavatam. No, go again. Oh, I understand now why you told me. You took my hand and took me to the next layer. Now I understand. Go again. So in this way, similarly, no? One layer, and the new layer says, oh, now I understand the meaning of Murari. I thought it was the previous, now I get it. One more. Now it makes full sense, full circle. Circle keeps expanding. Let's make fuller circle. So Murari, to begin with, generally is translated as the enemy of Mura. Ari is enemy. And Mura is the name of one demon. Now we will share briefly the story of Mura. But Ari means enemy. So generally there are many names of Krishna with the word Ari. You just add Ari to any name of some demon, and then you have a name for Krishna. And that happens. That's grammatically possible. You have Kamsa Ari. Aristasurari, or Aristari, sorry. Aristari, Kamsari, and so on. You put Ari, and he's the enemy of Aristasura, he's the enemy of Kamsa, he's the enemy of Mura, and so on. So it's a name of Krishna in connection to that particular Lila. So what's the story of this demon Mura, which makes Krishna be called as Murari? So it is, according to the Goswamis, they mentioned this mainly narrated in the Vamana Purana, and there was one asura called Murari, Murari is Krishna, Mura. So he was son of Kasyapa Muni, so great father, but somehow the combinations, as you know, Kasyapa had different, currents of progeny. So some of them were in Asuric direction, otherwise in Asuric direction. So he came from the Asuric Vamsa or lineage. And he saw that many of his elder brothers, somehow, to make a long story short, because there are so many stories in this Purana and in connection to that and previous life of each one of them. So, but his elder brothers were all of them quite weak physically and vulnerable in that sense. So he didn't want, he wanted to represent the Asura lineage in a more consistent way. So he performs very intense tapasya and started to worship Brahma, very much in the line of Hiranyakashipu and this type of personality, worshiping Brahma for a boon. So this is a very particular type of of mentality. No, I worship someone, but only because I want something from that someone. It's totally one-pointed in that direction. Just doing extreme things, as we know. Just for that person to come and say, what do you want? I want this. Okay, end of the transaction. Thank you so much. Sign here. You have what you want. I'm pleased. Thank you. So the devas feel indebted. Okay, they are doing so much for me. I have to offer something. So Brahma appears and say, I'm happy with your tapasya. So what do you want from me? So Mura say, well, if you are happy with what I did, please bless me with the following boon. I want that whoever I touch on their chest will die immediately. Remember, he was feeling, oh, my family are so weak, so I need something that makes me super powerful or something like this. Everyone comes and... So Brahma was lamenting, such a stupid thing he's asking me. He did such an effort and sacrifice. He's requesting such a superficial boon. But he replied, what to do? He wants that. So, tatastu, which means, how is it in English? So be it. So be it. So, Brahma disappeared and Mura wanted to put his new toy into practice, basically. So he started to look for the demigods, because they are the arch rivals. No? So he wants a good fight with them to test his. But all the news already spread. Brahma gave Mura this blessing of whoever he touches in the chest dies. So nobody wanted to fight with him. No? So he wanted to, come on, fight with me. Come on, fight with me. No. So it was kind of frustrated at one point. No? It's like if you play so nice something that nobody wants to play with you because they know they will be totally defeated. No? Which means you don't play that nicely, because if you play nicely means people keep inviting you to play with them. But if everyone is scared of playing with you, it means even though you may be talented, you are doing something wrong. People are not inviting you to be part. Everyone is running from you because you are too much. No. So he was challenging everyone, Gandharvas, demigods, Yakshas. At one point he started to challenge Asuras just in case he needed to do something with that. So everyone was totally afraid of him and running. So he was frustrated. So he continued traveling the three worlds, and eventually he went to Jamalok, or the abode of Jamaraj, the superintendent, you say in English, of death. And he challenged him. Imagine, you challenging Jamaraj. I mean, that's challenging death personified, basically. Jamaraj knew the whole thing, and already there was some plan going on. So he said, "Oh, Mura, you are so powerful. Before you, I'm insignificant." Jamaraj was telling him, "No." So actually, if you really want a good fight, as I feel you wanted, then go and battle with Vishnu. He's a fit candidate for your adhikar, your eligibility. I don't see any warrior of your caliber in the whole of three worlds. So at the same time, Mura felt like, oh, I'm special. Only Vishnu can fight with me. So he asked, where does Vishnu live? Well, he didn't have a clue about that. So Jamaraj Mala said, well, Vishnu Lok by Kunta. So follow this route, go there, turn right here, up there, up. in. Are you rich by Kunta? So again, the question may come, as Guru Maharaj say, but how such a brute person like this one reached by Kunta? Similar to the idea of Durvas, when Guru Maharaj explained, sometimes as the king brings a tiger to the court to have some entertainment, some of these personalities are allowed there for a while for some purpose, and so on. So he had a long journey, by Kunta. I mean, it's not something to express in miles and geographical material distance, but it's a way of putting, you have to go through to a long road path. It's a long journey. It's not just weekend and I'm there. He traveled, and he arrived finally there. And he was considerably tired because of such journey. Mm-hmm. So Narayan appeared and said, "Oh, so why you have come here, Mura?" "See, I came to engage in battle with you." Mm-hmm. So, I'm of course, Vishnu already knew what's going on. He's omniscient. Say, "But you want to battle with me? But you came here. You are trembling." He said he was trembling because of being tired of the journey. So here you are trembling like an old frightened man. I won't battle with someone like that. I mean, you're totally scared to begin with before the battle. And you say, I do not fight with cowards, basically Vishnu said. As you can imagine, Mura was like... So Mura was like, no. What are you telling? Vishnu said, you are totally trembling. You see, you are totally agitated. You see, check your pulsation, you say? You're beating. So he puts his hand on his chest. End of the story. So as soon as he touched his chest, Brahma's boom proved real, and Mura died immediately. So that's where the name Murari comes to Narayan, Vishnu. So of course, now we will ask the question, what has this to do with the gopis calling Krishna Murari? So they say that the gopis heard this story, as you may imagine, in Vrindavan, the Brajavas hear this type of stories, avatars, and Vishnu himself killing demons from Purnamasi, who is like the elder guru or female guru of the whole village. Mm-hmm. And the gopis, in their spontaneous conception, if you will, they thought, well, Krishna, of course they do not think Krishna is Narayan, Krishna is God. We know that that's not happening in Vrindavan, or even sometimes if some glimpse comes because of some extraordinary thing Krishna did, or some rumor comes from somewhere else. As Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in Raghavarma Chandrika, maximum they will think, oh, our Krishna is God. How incredible is our Krishna? They never, the last converging point is never God. The last converging point is just sort of thinking, my son is God. Oh, my son is so incredible. So the last point is my son, not God. First my son, God in between, okay, he may be God, my son again. And her vatsalya is increasing. But generally that's not the case. But our acharya sometimes give that like possibility, like even if that were to happen, hypothetically speaking, if some of the Vrajavasis for a moment were to consider Krishna is God, they will do it in such a way, according to their Braj DNA, that it will only augment their particular intimate relationship with Krishna. Oh, Krishna is God. Oh, the friends will think, oh, our friend is God. We have such an incredible friend. He's even God. But the only reality for them is their friendship is escalating more and more. That's the only thing. It's not that, oh, he's God. That's the bhava of someone like Arjuna, who is Krishna's friend. But when he realizes he's God, his friendship recedes to the background. He even starts to cry and beg forgiveness. Sorry that I behave like a friend. We are God. That's another type of friendship. But in Vrindavan, whatever, as we mentioned always, appears on the way, on their bhava, it only nourishes that. That's the power of their love. It nourishes from every single thing you put in their way. Call it obstacle, whatever. It only serves to increase their strength. So in this way, the gopis here call Krishna Murari. Murari. So why Murari? They think, oh well, Narayan is Murari and Krishna, he's not Narayan. We know Narayan is God. Krishna is Krishna. But when Krishna was born, Gargacharya, who is like the priest who did all the rituals, he mentioned that he will be like blessed by Narayan. He will do things similar to Narayan. Narayan will act through him. He's special. Krishna, our Krishna is special. No? So in that sense, they think, okay, no? Narayan killed the Mura demon, and Krishna has similar qualities to Narayan by the grace of Narayan. So from that side, they call Krishna Murari. No? Like they make this type of connection. Because, and what's the point in this connection? Murari is Krishna, Narayan, who killed Mura. He's such a powerful personality that he even killed that fearful asura. So, in that sense, they are comparing here. That's why the Manasi Ganga, go back to the verse. The rivers in Vrindavan are flowing, neglecting the ocean, neglecting their husbands, breaking their currents, and flowing towards Krishna without any fear. They don't have fear. They become fearless because of what Krishna is inspiring in them, such as the fearlessness that Vishnu himself inspired by killing such a demon as Mura. You follow the line of thought? So the gopis connect. No, okay. Vishnu is so powerful, inspired fearlessness by killing such a demon as Mura. Krishna has the same qualities as Narayan, and that's why the rivers are flowing towards him instead of towards their husbands without fear of high. And of course, again, the implication is, let's do the same us. He's Murari. Krishna says in the Gita, Mamekam Sharanam Braja Sarvadharmam Paritya. Antvam Sarvapapibhyo Mokshai Syami Masaja. Do not fear, I will free you from all obstacles, but just surrender to me. Leave everything behind and come to me. Ultimately, that verse is applicable to the situation of the gopis here also. So, this second time that usually sometimes in poetry and in Sanskrit composition, certain things are not to be repeated twice. They are considered like a redundancy. Of course, sometimes that's allowed for some purpose. But for example, here the name, now we'll go to some other layers of meaning with the idea of Murari. One would say, well, but already the name Mukunda was given. Why a second name in the same verse? Someone may say that's redundant. When one name is enough as with the other verses and so on. But it is say also that it was necessary to use the name Murari in connection to what's going on in this verse, to what's the effect of the flute on the river, for example. No? For example, it is say that Jamuna herself, Jamuna Devi in Vrindavan, heard this story of the Mura demon as well, of Mura agitated in anger and so on. So the gopis project, as Mura was agitated in anger, or because of the long journey, however you may like to put it, by the two of them when facing Vishnu, now Jamuna herself is showing agitation in the form of whirlpools, and is begging Krishna to satisfy her. To deal with her agitation, basically. As Vishnu dealt with the agitation of Mura killing him, Jamuna is asking Krishna, deal with my agitation by killing the agitation. Killing it in the way of agreeing to some form of union. And of course, again, the gopis are projecting that to themselves. May Krishna do away with our agitation. May Krishna... Everyone is receiving that from him. Everyone is agitated in their own respective way regarding to Krishna. Everyone is like affected, and Krishna is dealing with each separate case, except for us. Again, over and over again, that's the case for the gopis. Everyone is receiving Krishna's attention, interaction. We are the only ones who have been damned for that not to happen. So again, Gargachari is saying, Jiva Goswami further clarifies that. Gargachari is the one who says in the 8th chapter of the 10th canto, Narayana Sama. And so when Krishna is born, and after that he says, Narayana Sama. Sama means like similar to. So Krishna is similar to Narayana. And Jiva Goswami says there, by saying this, among many implications, one is, in worshipping Krishna, the gopi's vow of chastity is not broken. Because everyone should worship Narayana. By worshipping God, you are not being unchaste. It's the proper thing to do. And Krishna is like Narayana. So, by worshipping him, we are not breaking any vow of chastity. So that's one way of conceiving how the gopis' chastity remains intact, even though it may seem exactly the opposite. And that's how they themselves justify that to themselves also. I mean, he's like Narayana, we are worshipping Krishna, I mean, we are not at fault, and they are right for sure. Another meaning of the word murari, mura means affliction. Now comes all the Sanskrit possibilities for one single word. So mura means affliction. So murari means the enemy of affliction. Something like, similar to Mukunda in one sense in that case. So in this case it refers, Krishna is taking away the suffering of the river, of Jamuna, by allowing Jamuna Devi to touch his feet. And again, the implication is, when that day will be ours, that he allows us, he takes our own affliction by allowing us to do the same. Also, Srila Jiva Goswami gives a deeper meaning to the idea murari. He says, Jiva Goswami says, just as Mura was playfully killed by Krishna before, Krishna, Vishnu, he makes a place with the word Mura and the word Mara. Mara means death, basically. But he also translates this as Cupid. Because sometimes he connects, okay, because of desire in this world, death is perpetrated. Basically, that's what keeps the whole cycle running. So he's saying, just as the gopi think, according to Jiva Goswami, just as Mura was playfully killed by Krishna before, death too, which is killing us right now, should be cast away by you, Krishna. We are dying in separation. You are the enemy of death. So kill the death that is killing us. Something like this, no? Generally, death is the one killing, but they are asking he who kills death himself. You know? And also, Mura is a term that is connected with Madhurya Prem. So, Murari will mean, in this case, the enemy of Madhurya Rasa. The enemy of Madhurya Prem. The enemy of romanticism. No? And with this, of course, the gopis are implying Krishna knows how to interact with everyone except for us. He's reciprocating perfectly with all the rasas, all departments, but we who are approaching him in Madhurya Bhav, it's not happening. It's not happening. He deserves the name Murari. He's acting like attacking our romantic feelings, something like a way of saying, you know, how much they would like to have the meeting. Let's share some meanings, some commentaries to the verse shared by some of our acharyas. Sorry. Starting by Srila Sanatan Goswami. He says like this. Hearing the bewildering flute song, the rivers abandoned a natural quickness in going towards their husband, some points will be repeated of what we mentioned, the ocean, became embodied, the rivers, turned out as ladies who have divine presentations, such as gems and pearls, and being adorned with their presentations, which were placed above lotuses, did a full embrace by holding Murari's feet in place with the long arms of their waves. So here Sanatana Goswami gives a much more personified version of the verse. You know, the rivers showing their personalities, because again, they are people. Again, Jamuna Devi. Jamuna is not just some extension of water, but it's a divine personality. So they offered different presentations of jewels inside the lotuses that were given there. Of course, the most important thing there is their hearts being expressed through those presentations. As Guru Maharaj said the other day, in Vrindavan you have diamonds and emeralds just like on the path, on the side. So it's the jewels in themselves are not the real thing, basically. That's just a way of offering the jewels of their heart, the lotuses of their heart. It's like a way of symbolizing what's going on internally. You know? How their hearts are blossoming like lotuses with all its fragrance and so on for Krishna's the bumblebee to enter there, and the jewels representing again the wealth of their prem dhan. But in this case, yes, they are described as the offering lotuses, which is say that lotuses are dear to Krishna, not only because of the species itself of the lotus category, which is particularly charming, but also because they were originated in Vrindavan. So they were Braja lotuses, of course. So they were especially dear. I'm making this point, no? Whatever comes from Vrindavan has a special connection and proximity for Krishna. That comes from Braj. And also interestingly, the word Kamala, which comes in this verse, which means
lotus,
thank you, is also a name for Lakshmi. She's known as Kamal Devi many times. Which Lakshmi implies fortune. She's generally known as the goddess of fortune. So basically the idea will be that here the rivers are offering lotuses or are offering their fortune. Basically that thing, all their wealth in the form of lotuses again. And which is their wealth? Their love. But taking that particular shape. And they're offering that Kamala, their fortune. Which again, in Vrindavan, as Guru Maharaj said the other day, every triskalpa briksha, every speck of dust is Chintamani, every cow is Kamadenu. You can ask whatever you want to every atom in Braj, but nobody cares for that. Everyone is just engaged in, not in asking, but in giving. So that's the real wealth, basically. That's the point. Also, it is described that the river were offering their own water, cool, fragrant water, as padya, which in Archana, that's like water for washing the feet. Sometimes when doing Archana, one offers padya. So that means like water that one is bathing the feet of whoever you are offering that to. So that's also that parallel made here with the rivers offering their water as well. Let's see what Srila Jiva Goswami has to tell us regarding this particular verse in the Gopal Shampu, because in Gopal Shampu is a whole parallel to the 10th canto, very interesting sections there. So he says like this: hearing the flute, the river stopped, overcome with bewilderment. Its waves swelled, the water trembled, and shouted through the calls of swans. It became insane. The river became insane. It approached Krishna in the distance and with its waves at its hands offered lotuses to his lotus feet. His feet are lotuses already, but they can become lotusified even more, if you will. This is suggested here. The rivers, wives of the ocean, quickly go to meet him, overcoming the rules. One gopi said, "We are not so fortunate. The river hath easily accrued pious credits. We cannot compare to them at all. We must become detached from happiness and distress. We cannot give up our household chores and service to our husbands. We cannot publicly wear ornaments to please Krishna. We cannot make his feet stop moving with our arms and embrace him on our chests." All the things the rivers are doing. So again, we find this classical narrative here. The gopis comparing themselves to the rivers, contrasting the fortune and lamenting over and over again. But interestingly, again, it is mentioned that the rivers are lamenting that they do not have a gopi form, no? To further facilitate the romantic feelings for Krishna and join Krishna here and there. Gopis can move. The rivers flow but cannot move just everywhere. Not like jump outside and move here and there. So this is also an interesting dynamic in the Venu Gita. In general, the gopis appreciating in the environment, longing for that, lamenting for their own situation, but generally on the other side that is happening the same thing. So that's what happens when two people who have real love in their heart meet. It's not that they are saying, look how I'm so much better than you, and you are nobody. And they say, no, I am better than you. We know what's that about. That's here, over here, but over there, that's not happening. So that's the situation. Let's go to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Salartha Darshana. He's paraphrasing the gopis here also. So we see similar descriptions, but also slightly different from their own particular perspective on participation in the lila. As their excess water swells into waves, the rivers embrace the lotus feet of Murari, standing motionless on the river bank. So Krishna becomes also stunned on the river bank by entering in touch with Jamuna and so on. Stamba. He also feels ecstasy. Remember, it's not just the rivers are. The other party feels something and Krishna doesn't care. He's reciprocating accordingly. So never forget that, because sometimes we may become overwhelmed with this idea of what we should feel for Krishna. Not we should, but what is expected for us to attain in connection to feelings for Krishna. We kind of forget how he's totally willing to feel the same for us, and how he already is feeling for us much more than what we feel for him, if you will. And so that's a good beginning point for us to be encouraged in our own part. So don't forget that love is a reciprocal dealing. It's a two-way street. It's not just only one part. I have to do this and he's just there waiting or totally whatever, indifferent and so on. So this is important. So Krishna here is standing on the riverbank, receiving the presentation of Jamuna and standing there motionless. And says, and holding onto them present offerings of lotus flowers. Yet, the ocean does not harbor any hatred towards those rivers because of their love for Krishna, unlike our husbands. Okay, so the gopis here is saying, okay, the husband also loves Krishna, and that's why he's not putting any opposition. But our husbands do not love Krishna. Again, as we mentioned, they love Krishna. But in the lila, it seems they do not. Because someone has to be Judas in the lila, for Christ's glory too. And generally, the bad guys are the most difficult role to play. They are the best actors, the most surrendered people, basically. So do not downplay the gopis' husbands because they are presenting opposition or whatever. They are very important role to play to highlight the glory of the gopis. So they are very selfless in their role in the lila. They are generally not like glorified for eternity from all of us. The husbands of the gopis, Kijai. Nobody generally says that. But someone has to do that, and because they are doing that in part, that's also by contrast shedding light of, the gopis, Kijai. So in the same way, nobody's saying Judas Kijai, but if it were not for him, in many senses, by way of contrast, indirectly, the position of Christ wouldn't be as highlighted as it was. So Judas Kijai. Srila Siramas gives this nice explanation on Judas, mentioning actually he was the best disciple of Christ. And Christ himself asked him, I need you to do this for me. You do this service for me. Someone has to do it, and you are the most qualified of all my students. So you have to. You will be hated for eternity, and I will be glorified forever. Are you willing to do that? And Judas said, yes.
if it's for your pleasure, I'm ready to pay that price. I will be infamous, you say? Infamous for all time to come. As a service, and all light will be thrown on you and glory to you. So everyone will, yeah, I'm ready for that. Okay. Surrendered disciple, as you can see, ready for everything. Anyhow, so in this way, the Gopis lament, just see how unfortunate we are. Our husbands are not cooperating. And remember, this is building on other examples they saw of female deer, husbands were cooperating, Krishna Sar, Devis, ladies in heaven, the Devas were cooperating, their husbands. Now it's the turn of rivers and the ocean. Ocean is cooperating. It's not putting opposition. So all this is, again, the example comes back as a boomerang to the Gopis, and our husbands are not cooperating, and their desire to meet Krishna is increasing exponentially. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur continues saying, in this way the Gopi thought, if we were rivers like Jamuna or Manasi Ganga, now comes the projection of next birth, then we also will sacrifice our everything on hearing Krishna's Venu Nad and will come to him unrestrained. Then we will be able to embrace him and touch his feet. In other words, they're saying, actually, in their humility, if we will have the surrender and love they have, we will actually be doing that right now, but we are not doing that. So actually, they are not playing the victim. They are actually taking all the responsibility on their shoulders. Like he's saying, we should be doing something we are not doing. And in this way, they are giving each other support to do that, to transgress whatever they have not been able to transgress till this point of the Leela. And that they will transgress very swiftly, more and more. By taking birth as cowherd girls, we have been deprived in every respect. Imagine, a sadhaka is praying for being born as a cowherd girl, maybe, and they are the cowherd girls there are saying, by being born like this, we have been deprived in every respect. So you have to understand that. Now we fully understand that birth as a river is billions of times better than as a gopi. So again, we have to understand in which type of madness the gopis are saying that. Oh creator, we don't know how many offenses we have committed at your feet, that you have deprived us of meeting Krishna and have put so many obstacles in our way, binding us in the prison of household life. Alas, will we ever in any way be successful in having a relationship with Krishna? This is the very spirit of Purvarag. We want it so badly, but it's not happening. It's happening everywhere except for us. Try to analyze the situation. You want to have a relationship with someone who has a relationship with everyone except for you. And it's not happening. And it's not happening. And it's not happening. And it's happening with every single other person beautifully. And with you, it's not happening. But you have such love that your love is increasing in that situation. It's not that you get frustrated or depressed or, I don't care for all these people. I live here. I go to some other place. I forget about it. The Gopi is a kind of thing like that. As we know, sometimes even they say, we have so much headache by thinking about Krishna. And Krishna is such an unstable guy, ups and downs all day long. And we are like, in the Leela, the thing like that. So let's forget Krishna at least for a moment. I don't know, 30 seconds. It's like if I tell you, okay, let's sit, close your eyes, and try to think in Krishna for 30 seconds. I know it sounds like too much, but let's try it without interruption. 30 seconds, all right. That's a lot. The Gopis say the opposite. Let's try to forget Krishna for 30 seconds, or even less. So they sat in a circle, like yogis, half-closed eyes, mudra, trying to Kagrata focused the mind in one point. The point was forgetting Krishna. Forgetting Krishna, which for us is so spontaneous. No? I mean, we have Raganuga, forgetfulness of Krishna. Full spontaneity in neglecting Bhagavan. But the gopis were making the... And we are struggling so much to think about Krishna for 15 seconds in Japa or whatever. And it's like, oh my God, again my mind is going shopping here and there. I cannot do it again. But the gopis were struggling so hard to forget Krishna. Don't try too much. So they try 15 seconds. They were like, So after 30 seconds, they start to open their eyes and look at each other like, so, works? Work? And all of them, we fail. All of them fail. They want to forget Krishna, they were not able. We want to remember Krishna, we are not able. So try to see who is who and where is each one. But again, in their humility, the gopis are feeling now. Again, they are taking responsibility. Which offense we may have performed onto the Creator for us to have this body, this circumstance that do not allow for relationship with Krishna. We want a relationship. They are in Purvarag. Again, anticipating, growing in separation for the first type of union, which is called Samshipta Sambhog. There are four types of separation. I won't go in detail now with that. And there are four types of corresponding union to each one of those four types of separation. Purvarag, Mam, Pravas, and Prem Vaichitya are the four types of separation. And there are four types of corresponding union, because each type of separation is different. Now, one thing is Purvarag, you never met the beloved, Manis, Radha gets sulky, and there is separation between she and her and Krishna. Pravas means receiving distant land because of force of circumstance, Krishna going to Mathura. Or Prem Vaichitya, which is the two of them are together, but they experience separation in union, not union in separation. So it's a very unique circumstance which requires a very unique form of union to complement that. So Sankshipta Sambhog is the type of union that will come in response to Purvarag. Not yet, but it's coming. It's coming. Let's continue with what Vishwanath says, no? Which is another option in this connection. And this is not said by Vishwanath, sorry. But some other option regarding the comparison between the rivers and the gopi situation is the river is bound to flow. How do you call the two parts of the river? Like the banks? Between two banks. Generally, the river is not just like flowing like whenever it wants, but it's limited by the two banks. So the gopi think similarly, we are tied. Now, it's another way of drawing some udipana in their purvarag from the river. Similarly, we are drawn, from our family ties. We have two family ties. Now, our own family and our in-laws. Because most of the gopis are married. So we are tied to move between those two ties. We cannot just flow in another direction and run towards Krishna. So they somehow think, of course, in this case, the river is limited by the two banks, but though in another direction, the gopis are lamenting, oh, we cannot do that. So Krishna, Kavi Karnapur mentions here, the gopis are seeing their own lives through the rivers here. River is trembling, gopis are trembling. He says sometimes in the river you find foam, you say? So sometimes the gopis in ecstasy, they enter into a swoon, and foam comes from their mouth. How do you say? Foam at the mouth? Okay. So similarly, this parallel is bird. And he says sometimes in the Jamuna, in the river, the river is flowing and some birds are flying nearby, some poetic parallel. And he says, similarly in the gopis, the flute sounds and all the ornaments of the gopis start like to move and to fly like birds, like some way of comparing the two of them. So again, in this verse, what we find is, again, over and over again, in each verse of the Venu Gita, the gopis longing to be born in some other species. Again, they are not willing to change their sthayi bhav. Actually, the birth in another species to facilitate their sthayi bhav. They have a sthayi bhav, and that's not happening, if you will. The sthayi bhav is not attaining accomplishment. So they are just thinking how this sthayi bhav can be fulfilled, whatever form it takes, literally, whatever form we have to take. No? So if this will, in other words, if this will improve our service to Krishna, because all this, remember, is in the context of them giving pleasure to Krishna. It's not that they are selfishly agitated, wanting to enjoy Krishna or something. It's just a matter of bestowing, offering service. So sometimes, to make that point, some devotees will say, in order to serve Krishna better, a devotee sometime in ecstasy may pray, may I want to be born as a snake? And someone will say, but a snake? I mean, generally they are not very well known for, I don't know, for the closest associates of Bhagavan in Braj. Although snakes are everywhere in the Leela at the same time. You want to speak in terms of Anantasis and so on. But well, a lot more like a snake. But in this particular case, sometimes example is given, a devotee with some affinity towards Manjari Bhava may say, I would like to be born as a snake. And say, but you have attraction, affinity to Manjari Bhava. Why a snake? I say, well, because sometimes Sri Radha will get angry with Krishna without good reason, hetu, and she will take a distance. Now she starts to leave Krishna. The two of them are together, and for some particular reason, and sometimes it is described in Krishna Radha together, and Sri Radha is seeing Krishna, she's seeing herself in the reflection of Krishna's jewel on his chest, but she, in her madness, thinks, oh, Krishna is with a rival lover now. Although it is herself being with him. So she becomes angry and he turns back to Krishna instantly. And Krishna's like, what happened now? Sometimes I deserve this, but this time I was a good boy. No? And Sri Radha gets angry, turns her back and starts leaving the meeting place. So this devotee who would like to serve, facilitate their union, say, let me born as a snake. So in that moment when Radha is leaving Krishna, it will appear as a snake in front of her. And she will be so afraid of the snake coming that she will run towards Krishna back and embrace him, afraid of that. No? So I may perform my service to facilitate the reunion of the... But again, it's a way of expressing the need for being able to engage in that service. Not so much, I want to be a snake. I want to have snake bhav. No? Or something like that. No? So in this way, the gopis in this particular verse again are projecting their prem in this particular sense to the rivers and seeing how the rivers are expressing all these whirlpools and presentation, embracing Krishna's feet, presenting the flower of their hearts, themselves wanting to do that. And again, as Krishna, as the devotee approaches in that mode, Krishna also reciprocates. No? Famous verse of the Gita. It's in the context of the yogic section, 6th chapter, but Krishna, this ultimately applies to the highest yogis, the bhaktas, as Krishna says at the end of the chapter. So in this verse 30, he says, Yumam pasyati sarvatra sarvam chamai pasyati. How do you say? Yumam pasyati sarvatra sarvam chamai pasyati. Tasyaham na pranasami satchamena pranasati. Yeah, that's the verse. For ones who see me everywhere, basically, and sees everything in me, which is basically the vision of the Uttam Bhagavata, which is describing the Bhagavatam, but here Krishna is saying how he reciprocates with that person. So, Yomam Pasyati, who sees, Pasyati means to see, Mam, to me, Sarva Atra, in every place, Sarvam Chamai Pasyati, and who sees everything in me, no? Me and everything, everything in me, he similarly say, I am never lost for that person, nor that person is ever lost to me. In other words, I fully reciprocate. I'm there. If they see me there, it's because I'm there to reciprocate with them. So it's important to bear this type of ideas in mind while we hear the lamentation of the gopis and their desperation and not think, oh my God, poor girls, they're suffering so much. I don't want that. No. Sometimes those ideas can linger. No. But bahya bhisya jalahoi vitari anandamai Krishna prema adbhuta charit. Divine love is overwhelming, astonishing, because outwardly it seems like poison, inwardly it is like nectar. It's paradoxical, but it works like that. Sometimes the example is given of the, how do you call this? Block of ice. If I bring a big block of ice, and I tell Zach, put your hand on the block of ice. Your turn, sorry. Everyone will do it. So you put the hand and you see, okay, this is cold. Block of ice, this one. So what will happen if you put your hand on a block of ice for a while? You tell me, you never did that?
Okay, cold.
It'll melt.
If it's really cold, what will happen? It will burn you. It will burn you. It will leave you some markings of burning if it's really cold. So try to see the paradox. I mean, it's cold. It's so cold that it's burning. It's creating the opposite effect. So if that can exist in a simple block of ice in the phenomenon of this world, similarly we can try to accommodate this paradox that we see the gopis suffering and crying and expressing apparent misery, but actually that's fulfilled with the opposite of that, you know, the highest type of joy, but expressing in a particular way that is disconcerting. In the same way that coal is expressing in a particular way that is disconcerting, instead of giving you coal, it's burning you. And it leaves you some mark of that, no? So all this for us to understand with some examples from this world, which are already paradoxical, how higher quarters operate, basically. Anyhow, some thoughts we want to share today about this verse, number 15. We are concluding the verse today here. And tomorrow, we'll continue with further so-called, quote-unquote, inanimate objects of Braj. In this case, we will direct our attention to the clouds of Vrindavan. So from the earth water, we go again to the heavens, to the sky. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Shriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Shri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Nantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Venu Gita ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Priman, Vande Nanda Braja Srinam Padarim Abhikshu Sarisam Harikatudgitam Punati Bhuvanatrim.